Jeff Passan, it has been an insane 48 hours of baseball news, and so I just have one question here for you at the top. How much, man? How much have you had to drink?
Bourbon? Or the nectar of the gods?
You know what I'm asking about.
Yeah, I've had quite a bit of Diet Mountain Dew. I did 3 20-ounce bottles of Dew yesterday, which, honestly, I feel pretty good about. Like, yesterday was a 6 Dew day, and I ended up doing just 3 Dews.
I like how for you, and for real baseball insiders, the terror alert scale of baseball news is how many bottles of Dew is currently ravaging your intestines. Just for the listener, that sound you just heard was Jeff Passan getting up from his chair, opening his cabinet, and just a bunch of Mountain Dew tumbling out. No, and now you're just guzzling it.
Yeah. Can we go full disclosure here? It's before
Please.
9 a.m. local right now.
If Mountain Dew does not sponsor you by the end of this podcast, Jeff, I don't know what they're doing anymore.
Yeah, here's the thing. I am really, really testing my body to see if it wants to produce another kidney stone.
The kidneys, they're feeling everything that's happening in Major League Baseball, probably more than anything else on this planet right now.
They say to me, you know what, Jeff? We will bear the brunt of this week in baseball for you. We will get you through this because, damn it, it's been a pretty great week, and we can't have a kidney stone interrupting that.
The Dew may have gotten MLB insider Jeff Passan through the past few days of free agent madness in Major League Baseball, but today, with a potential work stoppage coming tonight at midnight, we explain how we all got here despite years of warning, and why it might take something a lot stronger to get the national pastime through these next couple months. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, December 1st. This is ESPN Daily. So, Jeff, this is the sort of podcast where I'm going to say things to you and I can see you looking at your phone because stuff is still happening. But what we've seen over the past couple days with some of the biggest free agents in this sport rushing to sign before today, December 1st, what is the reason for this? Why is there this bull rush?
Because the baseball industry is about to implode.
Oh.
This is a very counterintuitive thing, Pablo. The baseball industry is on the verge of shutting down amid this historic spending spree that teams are going on. And it's not just the sorts of teams that you anticipate are going to be in this. It's not the New York Yankees. It's not the Los Angeles Dodgers. It's not the Boston Red Sox. It's all of these teams that weren't in the postseason last year, spending like they want to be in it this year, as the specter of a lockout is looming over the sport as it has been for the better part of 2 years now.
We'll get into the details of why the economy of baseball is in great flux because of the lockout in just a second here. I know you're in Dallas. I can see you in your hotel room right now there to cover this story. But I first want to talk about just some of the names that have come across your transom here. Because when Max Scherzer signs with the New York Mets, Jeff, for 3 years, $130 million. That's $43 million a year. Like, I want to avoid the sticker shock of that and sort of understand actually how a rational baseball person like you saw this, because what did this mean to you?
I had sticker shock too. You know, I had heard in the days leading up to Max Scherzer signing with the New York Mets that he had 3x43 on the table. And there's a natural skepticism when The previous record average annual value for a contract is $36 million for Gerrit Cole. That somebody is going to jump 20% in one fell swoop, even on a shorter term deal. But there are a couple of factors in play here that are important. Number one, Max Scherzer has always like to be a guy who sets records. And he likes to set records because, well, he's a competitor. But beyond that, he's also one of the very influential eight executive subcommittee members for the Major League Baseball Players Association. And if you go back and look at the history of the MLBPA, the idea is always push the salary envelope higher, because the second that a guy has a $43 million base salary, someone who's better than him can say, well, I deserve $43 million, do I not? Jacob DeGrom, if he opts out from the Mets next season, can say, I deserve $45 million if I stayed healthy and pitched to my capabilities this year. And the whole idea of this happening against the backdrop of this impending labor doom that we've been talking about for so long really is kind of rich. And Marcus Semien's another guy who's on that executive subcommittee. He gets 7 years and $175 million from the Texas Rangers. So these guys are walking into this potential lockout with a whole lot of money waiting for them on the other side.
Yeah, so let's get to the Rangers then, because Marcus Semien, you know, the shortstop they added, who will likely play second for them, you know, it's not just him. It's Corey Seager, Jeff, the former Dodgers shortstop, who got 10 years, $325 million. They also added, for, you know, good measure, a new starting pitcher in John Gray. But this is over $500 million in free agency already. And what does that tell you about what the Rangers are going for now?
Yeah, Pablo, it's over $500 million spent by a team that went 60-102 in 2021. a team that, if you look up and down their roster, there's not a whole lot there that you think might be around still in a few years. They bought a core. They bought the best middle infield in baseball, and it cost them a lot of money. But the Rangers understood something. In order to have relevance, you need to have guys that others want to play with. You know, it ties together so nicely with everything that's going on right now in the labor world. We have to flash back to the 1970s and understand that guys like Andy Messersmith and Dave McNally and Curt Flood, the standard bearers in the Major League Baseball Players Association, looked at free agency as Valhalla. They looked at free agency as this thing that was not going to just change the economics of sports, but change sports forever. So a team like the Texas Rangers, who stunk last year and who had very little hope going forward unless they complemented what they have down in their farm system now, could suddenly become relevant in one fell swoop with the signing of a check.
So tracing the history of baseball free agency does not normally take me to Detroit, Jeff, but Javi Baez signing a six-year, $140 million contract with the Tigers. I mean, now I know a guy on the Tigers who's not named Miguel Cabrera.
Is this the Marlins game 2.0? You got in trouble last time you played this, Pablo.
I'm still in trouble. I'm still banned. I'm still banned from that very strange ballpark. Yes. Derek Jeter has me on a poster. Yeah, do not allow this podcaster inside these gates.
The Detroit Tigers, like the Texas Rangers, are seeking relevance. And they're a little bit closer to it because they've got this core of pitching with Casey Mize, who was the number one pick in the draft a few years ago, with Matt Manning and with Tarik Skubal, and now signing Eduardo Rodriguez this offseason. So they've got four good young pitchers there. They've got two prospects in Spencer Torkelson, who's likely going to end up at first base, and Riley Green, who may be a center fielder but could move to a corner. They needed to add to their position player cash because they're very much in the same boat in that respect as the Texas Rangers, where you look up and down their lineup and you're not sure who's going to be here a couple of years down the road.
So when you look down the list of starting pitchers beyond Max Scherzer, Jeff, and here I'm talking about Kevin Gausman, who goes from the Giants to the Blue Jays for 5 years, $110 million. And then you get to Robbie Ray, the guy who won the AL Cy Young, who leaves Toronto for Seattle for 5 years, $115 million. I mean, these numbers are eye-opening. They're staggering. They're the kind of numbers that might cause fans to wonder, like, are these contracts deserved?
Of course it's deserved. And it's deserved because it's what they got. And that sounds very simple, right? But when it comes to baseball, for the longest time, the union has believed, worshipped at the altar of the free market. And the free market, to me, is what differentiates baseball. In the NBA, if you have certain credentials, you are going to get a specific amount of money. It does not matter if you are Giannis Antetokounmpo or Russell Westbrook. You're going to get paid around the same. Major League Baseball does not have that. Mm. Your market is what you make of it and what teams are willing to pay you. And so if Kevin Gausman is getting $110 million from the Toronto Blue Jays, then, well, I'm sorry to say, but he earned it. If Robbie Ray, coming off of Cy Young, is getting $115 from the Seattle Mariners, that is what the market gave him. And so if Major League Baseball revenues weren't where they are, if projections weren't what they are, these players wouldn't be getting these sorts of contracts.
And so the other names, Jeff, that are hoping for paydays like this, the ones who haven't signed yet as we tape right now, we're talking about Carlos Correa, Chris Bryant, Trevor Story, Freddie Freeman, Kyle Schwarber. If they don't sign before this lockout, what's the risk they're taking here?
Well, the risk they're taking is that the lockout ends, let's say, in mid-February, and everyone's getting ready to go to spring training, and teams are scrambling, and there's a trade market with the Oakland A's potentially dumping everyone in sight and other teams potentially moving guys, that slows down free agency a little bit. They're running the risk that teams are going to say, well, you know, we're on the cusp of the season, and if we hold out on you here, you're not going to have a team, and you don't want to go into a season without a team, so you better sign right now, and we're going to offer you less than you might want, but sorry, that's the market right now. They're also, though, looking at the potential of a higher competitive balance threshold, and if the luxury tax is higher, then teams like the New York Yankees and the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Mets and the Boston Red Sox and the Chicago Cubs might be more compelled to spend at the level that we simply haven't seen them spend this offseason.
So, Jeff, after the break then, I want to understand this lockout better, what both sides want, and how we got here.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Jeff, looming over all of this, as we've established now, is the expiration of the collective bargaining agreement and the impending lockout that would follow. So, again, you're there in Dallas to cover this stuff. We've known that this was coming. You've been warning the planet on this podcast that this was coming for a while now. This was on display also during negotiations for the COVID season and the shortened season in 2020, that this would be particularly thorny. So where do we stand as of right now?
Pablo, we stand in the same place that we have stood for days, weeks, months, years. In all likelihood, Major League Baseball will inform the Major League Baseball Players Association that they are locking them out. Let's define what a lockout is. A lockout is essentially a tool that can be used by companies in labor disputes to try and put pressure on the workers. It is essentially saying, until you agree to our deal, you will not go back to work. This is collectively bargained. This is part of the process. It's essentially the company's version of what for the players would be a strike. Now, there simply has not been any substantive movement toward an agreement at this point. And they've had a long, long time to get there. To see it at this point, it's frustrating because you know that when you get to a lockout, it gets to that point where there starts to be concern for the future. We've seen a World Series lost at the last labor stoppage that Major League Baseball had. That was a strike, and remember, that was a strike during the season. And after more than a quarter century of peace, we're finally on the precipice of something not only have we not seen in a long time, but that you just hoped and assumed baseball had learned its lesson from.
There's been a quarter century, Jeff, since 94 when we lost that World Series you're referring to. And you would hope that lessons have been learned, but I'm curious what the players are demanding here. What are their top issues that make them want to reinvite all of that uncertainty into their lives?
The players look at a few different tent poles of what they'd like to accomplish here. Number one, they want to get players paid early in their careers. You have to understand, in baseball's system right now, your first 3 years, you're getting paid around the major league minimum. Now, I understand probably everyone listening to this podcast would love to get paid the major league minimum of $570,500.
Sure.
It's a great salary, but compared to, say, $43.3 million, if you go out in those first 3 years and outperform Max Scherzer, you are still going to be making 1.3% of his $43.3 million. So whether it is a bonus pool for those guys or some other mechanism to get them paid younger, that's a big part of it. Competitive integrity is another issue. And what the union means by that is they're tired of tanking. Tanking disincentivizes teams to go out and get players on the free agent market. And while we've been talking, Pablo, about the Texas Rangers and about the Blue Jays and the Mariners and the Tigers spending money as they try to ascend toward a playoff spot, we also can look at the Baltimore Orioles, whose current payroll is projected to be $37 million. The Cleveland Guardians, who are at 40.2.
Jeff, those are payrolls that in total are less than what Max Scherzer is making in a year.
That is exactly my point, Pablo. Like, a single guy is making more, potentially, than an entire team. The third issue is service time manipulation. Major League Baseball's system is service-based, which means of the 186 or 187 days in a season, you have to spend 172 of them on a big league roster to get a full year of service. And after 6 full years of service, you go to free agency. Well, we see Chris Bryant out there right now. Chris Bryant in his last season ended with 6 years and 171 days of service. He was 1 day shy of being a free agent last year.
Man.
And that sort of service time manipulation, as the union and many others call it, is something that's, it's just hard to figure out how to fix that if you don't completely overhaul the system away from service time. So that's going to be a tough one. But I think the biggest one, and this is always going to be the biggest one because it has to do with money, is getting rid of artificial restraints on free agency. Now, these artificial restraints that exist, whether it is that CBT threshold of $210 million right now.
Right. That's the luxury tax that is placed on teams' payrolls to try to reduce overspending.
or it is draft pick compensation, where if you sign somewhere else, that team needs to give up a draft pick for the privilege of signing you. They're clearly not doing a whole lot to dissuade spending this offseason. And yet, if you get rid of them, fundamentally, theoretically, it is a much better thing for the players.
So in response to all of this, Jeff, what is the league offered, like, in an attempt to meet presumably halfway or somewhere around there on those issues?
There have been some proposals that have been accepted as possibilities, and there are some that have been laughed at, sneered at, grimaced at, and trying to figure out what the union wants has been the most difficult part of this entire thing for Major League Baseball, because it believes, and you know, some of this may be in good faith, some of this maybe not. It believes that what it's put out there has addressed what they're looking for. Now, yes, a $100 million salary floor, which was in one of its proposals, would go a long way to addressing some of these issues with teams that are looking at payrolls in the $30, $40, $50 million range potentially. It also came with a lowering of the CBT threshold from $210 million to $180 million, with more onerous penalties as well for exceeding it. So it's almost like you're robbing Peter to pay Paul here, and that's not something that the union was interested in at all. I think one that has a chance to really stand up is getting rid of direct draft pick compensation. So Corey Seager goes to the Texas Rangers because the Los Angeles Dodgers gave him a qualifying offer, which is a one-year $18.4 million tender that he rejected, of course, because he was going to do better in free agency. The Rangers, for signing Seager, have to give up a draft pick. And I'll tell you, that's the sort of thing that can hurt players' markets. If the Rangers don't have to give up that draft pick, do they give Corey Seager more money? Because the value that they would have assigned to that draft pick now could theoretically go to the player. A draft lottery, which MLB recently proposed, could go a long way to disincentivizing tanking, though, I mean, a draft lottery exists in the NBA, and we've seen a fair bit of tanking there anyway. So
yeah.
There are things out there that are percolating that are interesting, but the reality is the Players Association really hasn't felt very good about any of it.
The league's objectives here, as you would phrase it, what are they?
Well, there are a few things that the league wants. We can start with expanded playoffs. There's been a proposal, as Jesse Rogers wrote on ESPN.com, for a 14-team playoff system where the best team in each league gets a bye out of the wild card round. And then you have a wild card round in which the two division winners that aren't the ones with the best record in the league and the other team with the best record in the league, aside from those three, get to pick their opponents for a three-game wild card series.
Jeff, I love it so much. Do you love this as much as I love this? Because I love this.
I love it because it's bulletin board material. And even though athletes can just be so simple and basic in their motivations, like, he said something bad about me, I now hate him with the fire of a thousand suns. Like that, I mean, that's all it takes. And imagine the bulletin board material you're going to have if somebody chooses you. They chose you because they think they can beat you, because they think they're better than you.
What I want is a TV show. Can we make this a TV show where there is the choosing broadcast live?
It will be a TV show. It's got to be a TV show, right?
Could we see a Mountain Dew drunk Jeff Passan wearing a judge's wig in a robe presiding over a draft of teams that think less of each other? That would be terrific.
Yes, please. Judge Jeff. So there's the expanded playoffs. But more than anything, like, Pablo, we can look at all of these things. More than anything, they just want to keep paying players the same amount that they are right now. But like, that's what this comes down to. Major League Baseball and the owners feel like the players get a large enough share of the money as is, even though the average salary in the sport has actually gone backward over the last 5 years. As revenues have gone up, you know, COVID excepted, revenues have continued to grow in the sport. And that's a big part of why we are where we are right now.
So, Jeff, I also want to understand the emotional state of things here. Like, how would you describe just the animosity level in a negotiation like this?
In a negotiation, there's always going to be this very weird tug. Because on one hand, a players' association and a league are adversaries, right? When you are, as a group of men, looking to extract as much money as you can from the people for whom you work, there's going to be tension there. It's inherent. It's natural. It's obvious. On the other hand, these are two parties that have to be partners, because without partnership, you end up with labor strife. With labor strife, you potentially end up losing games. If you lose games, you lose revenue. If you lose revenue, nobody wins. So it's always a very delicate dance between the sides. And listen, it's there to guide the general core economics of Major League Baseball. But there's also the fact that teams have gotten smarter. And with that knowledge has come the realization that the aging curve is a real thing. And when the aging curve, Pablo, is a real thing, you are going to be far less likely to pay guys deeper into their 30s unless they are transcendent Hall of Fame type talents like Max Scherzer than you would have been in the past. The middle class of guys who are, you know, a win above replacement, all of a sudden, you look at the value that they bring and you realize that you can get it from inside of your farm system, 90% of the production for 10% of the cost. Of course, you're going to gravitate toward that. So the shrinking of the middle class has left the rank and file in the Players Association, frankly, angry at the trajectory of the economics in the game right now. And the Players Association has to do this thing where you are representing a vast majority of players who aren't even going to make it to free agency in their careers.
Right.
And yet you prioritize free agency as the most important thing because you're hoping that they are living on that dream, that they're going to be one of the lucky few who actually get to make it.
No, I mean, the reality, Jeff, is that there are a lot better odds of you being one of the guys on that Baltimore Orioles payroll that's smaller than Max Scherzer's annual salary than you are being Max Scherzer. So all of this celebration, all of the champagne bottles getting popped because of the current free agency system and this week in particular, the tension underneath that, I mean, that seems to be as much of the story as the league versus the union is what's going on inside of the union itself.
No question. And the union, remember, for a very long time, Pablo, dominated this relationship. I mean, from the inception of the Major League Baseball Players Association, with Marvin Miller at its head, with Don Fear running the show in the 80s and 90s, they were a formidable force. They were seen as the best union in America. But Major League Baseball got very disciplined, and they have always had something to their advantage. And that is that people tend to own teams, whether in baseball, football, basketball, hockey, or otherwise, for long periods of time. Teams tend to be generational gifts sometimes that are given from rich fathers to sons, to daughters, to other family members that are passed down like an heirloom. And because of that, because you know that you are in this for the long haul, you can play the long game. The union now especially does not have that latitude and leeway to play the long game when so much of their 1,200-person constituency isn't going to be in the game for very long. So what they're trying to do is to win now and to win going forward. And that's put them in a precarious position where they need to thread a needle that they simply haven't been able to do at this point. And that has helped, along with the intransigence of some people on the ownership side, put baseball on the cusp of being shut down, locked out, and frozen after this spending spree that has been beyond bonkers. As an appetizer, an amuse-bouche, if you will, we're just going to go and splash the pot with $1.5 billion.
So, Jeff, as our lockout maitre d', apparently, I need you to tell me when I need to start panicking about a conflict that may have no end in sight after the break.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All right, Jeff. So we characterized the amuse-bouche. I now want to figure out, like, when is the entree getting served? When is the table going to be wiped clean? What is the timeline on a deal getting struck here in your mind?
It's important, Pablo, not to panic, because I understand the word lockout has all kinds of connotations to it. The fact that we're referencing the last time that this happened was when a World Series was lost. Like, ooh, that's grim. You know, it was one of the lowest moments in baseball history, and they'd been able to avoid it at this point. But we have to recognize the great harm, especially to fans, does not happen until games are lost. So while everybody has understood that the collective bargaining agreement is going to expire at 11:59 p.m. on December 1st, they still have about 2 months to figure this thing out. And I say 2 months because I'm looking at the fact that you have 100-plus free agents still out there, right? I'm looking at the fact that teams are going to need to scramble to put their rosters together if a deal is struck by, say, February 1st to 15th, somewhere in that window. There's a lot of stuff to do, but there's time to do it. If we start getting toward the middle of February and there hasn't been progress, that might set off some alarm bells. If we get to March 1st and there's still not a deal, you should panic at that point, because then you start getting into the point where not only are you losing spring training games and the revenue that comes with them, but you are potentially losing regular season games. And I really hope it does not get to that point, because it will be ugly. There will be public fighting that there hasn't been yet. There will be a lot of issues that have not shown themselves to this point. And I think baseball and the union have about 60 days to avoid that. And if we get to that point, this skirmish, we can call it.
Yeah.
Then it's going to be war.
As baseball uses this lockout as a cudgel, prodding, poking, maybe more than that, what do the players feel in all of this? Like, what are the downsides for them? How does this reshape what their offseason would have been like?
It's tough for some players who want to be in communication with their manager. Can't do it. This could be tough for players who are on rehab plans, who would like to talk with their trainers. Nope, not happening. There was a scenario that was posited to me where if there's a wedding on the night of the lockout, and a manager is at his player's wedding, the second that the lockout happens, he cannot be there because he cannot communicate with the player.
Oh, man.
And so it is It is no communication between club employees and players. It is no free agent signings. It is no trades. It is essentially turn off the lights and, as an industry, we'll see you when we got a deal. The impact that it has on fans who, yes, they care about the players. They care about the players' welfare and well-being. But on the day-to-day thing, the only thing you're going to be missing are the sweet bombs being dropped on Twitter. I'm sorry, but I'm not going to have any of those.
No, I mean, Jeff, so let's get to your life here now at the end, because
that's the important thing, Pablo, right?
Exactly. Outside of the passing bombs being kept in their chambers here, what do you think is going to happen? What do you expect this is going to be like?
I'm an optimist by nature, despite what you may believe having listened to me on this show before. And I am hopeful that the golden goose is not slayed, because that's what sports is. That's what baseball is. Everybody is playing this majestic game, watching this wonderful thing unfolding on the field, and making crazy money doing it. And my hope, the good angel on my left shoulder, is sitting here and whispering to me, saying they'll figure it out because it's the pragmatic thing to do. But the little labor devil on my right shoulder has a big smile on his face right now, and his pitchfork is nice and sharpened, and he says this is going to turn into utter, outright chaos.
Jeff, all I know, all I'm very secure of as we talk about this, is that both the little angel on your shoulder and the little devil on the other, they are both just forcing you to chug Mountain Dew.
I mean, Mountain Dew is devil's nectar, but Mountain Dew is also angel tears. So honestly, I feel like I'm winning in both respects.
Yeah. Jeff Passan, thank you for filling us in on labor strife, and just don't let the dew do you.
Pablo, the dew always does me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.